Welcome back. This is Mark Shana. Good to have you all with us here, and we will continue our series on the deindustrialization of Baltimore tomorrow here on the Mark Steiner Show with a longer conversation this coming Friday on the air. And I hope you're enjoying it, because I think it's been a really well-done series that tackles a really important subject for our communities, and it's been a pleasure to work with these young people and their faculty members at UMBC. On our way to this conversation on our National News Roundtable, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From Common Core to school funding, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org, one word. We are joined here in studio by Bob Summerby, editor of the Daily Howler, and Lenny McAllister, Republican strategist, former candidate, current host of Night Talk, Get to the Point on Pittsburgh Cable News Channel, and of Get Right with Lenny McAllister on News Radio 1020 KDKA in Pittsburgh. You can also see his work at LennyMcAllister.com. Lenny and Bob, good to have you both with us.
Thanks for having us again, Mark.
So, Lenny, you keep moving around. Now you're in Pittsburgh. We've got to keep finding out where you are next.
Well, I'm in my hometown.
This okay, so you're back in your hometown. Okay.
back in my hometown. I was in Chicago for 3 years, but a family situation, a family health crisis brought me back to Pittsburgh.
Sorry about that.
Everything's going well now with the family, and everything's on the mend, which is good. But it was an interesting way that God brought me back to my hometown after 13 years being removed.
Well, welcome back to your hometown. We'll get you on the air another day to debate the Steelers versus
the Ravens. The Ratbirds? Yeah, exactly.
Here we go. So, folks, you can join us here.
They're on Sunday Night Football. They just released the schedule yesterday or the day before, and they're, as always, they're going to be on Sunday Night Football in November.
It's a live-for-TV event in the making, absolutely. I'm surprised they're not going to have them on Thanksgiving again this year.
Well, I have a soft part in my heart for Pittsburgh. I shouldn't say that in Baltimore, but I like the Steelers. Anyway, we're going to cover national news here with our two guests, everything from Benghazi to Florida and lethal injections to what's going on in Nigeria. Let me just begin off with this email I got because it's from one of our beloved elders in the community. Grandmother Edna wrote in, Edna Lawrence, grandmother wrote in saying, "Greetings, we as mothers and women are standing in solidarity praying for the return of our girls in Nigeria. Grandmother Edna would like to ask all women to wrap a piece of fabric around your handbags, your doors, and your baby girls, and so our girls are brought home. A special thanks to the Baltimore Leadership School for that heartfelt rally on May the 9th, 2014, and to Spirits in Motion, Freedom Students as supporters. Freedom to women has and still is a historical struggle all over the world. Let us remember Nigeria is only a river away." From Grandmother Edna. She is one of our cherished elders, and I saw that pop up, and I want to make sure that we read that at the top of this hour. You can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages, or you can tweet me here, at Mark Steiner. Tweet us. Let me begin, though, before we go to Nigeria, which we've covered a bit this week. We're going to cover a great deal more. I have to understand, and Bob, I'll let you begin, and then we'll go right to Lenny. I follow the national news as we all do, and Benghazi is all over the pages. And I had a long talk about this with Elijah Cummings, congressman, about a month ago after he was summarily shut up and attacked by Congressman Issa live on television. And I understand we have to get to the bottom of the things our government does, but I'm trying to. Won't you guys help me put our hands around what is really going on here?
Well, as Humphrey Bogart said to. What's her name? Ingrid Bergman. We'll always have Benghazi. You remember that famous line? You know, I'm not personally opposed to another hearing. That, you know, I'm not opposed to Hillary Clinton being subpoenaed. That's fine. You know, she testified once, and I don't recall which of the 300 committees she testified before that was, which produced that somewhat unfortunate soundbite about what differences it make at this point, you know, which is an unfortunate, it's not the greatest soundbite to have produced. She did testify before the Congress, and guess what happened that day? As always happens, the members all used their time making excited speeches, and she was asked virtually no questions. And so now we're back to Trey Gowdy wanting to ask her, did she communicate with President Obama that day? Well, that's fine. I'm fine with her being asked that question. Fine. But the last time when she was sitting there for hours, no one asked her because everyone was too busy posturing. So the whole Benghazi thing, I did a thing on Benghazi yesterday at the Daily Howler. I've done quite a bit of work, especially on the Susan Rice aspect of this. To me, it's an example of how nothing can ever get resolved in our political and journalistic culture, partly because, and as we liberals and Democrats, it's easy to criticize the Republicans, and of course they have behaved foolishly in various ways. But our own liberal inability to deal with any issues, our refusal to defend Susan Rice, who really said nothing that was wrong. She had one factual error when she testified, when she spoke on the five Sunday shows 2 years ago. She said one thing that turned out to be wrong. Her comments were instantly misparaphrased, mocked, ridiculed, and we liberals are unable to clarify anything, we refuse to defend anyone. MSNBC did not mention her name for the next 2 months while she was being trashed and mischaracterized. Brave little MSNBC literally did not mention her name until President Obama finally defended her after the election. And then it was okay for them to defend her. But they let her be mischaracterized, misquoted, misparaphrased, and it's just we're unable to function at all.
We have to take a very short break. We're going to come right back to Lanny McAllister and his thoughts and yours at 410-319-8888. What is about Benghazi that gets you a craw or not? And more. Stay with us.
When the saints go marching in, here come Brother Hickenbottom down the aisle with his trombone. Blow it, boy.
Wonder, born on this day in 1950, May the 13th, as we went out, we listened to a little bit of Louis Armstrong when the Saints Go Marching In was recorded on this day by Louis Armstrong in 1938, May the 13th. And we are here with Lanny McAllister and Bob Sorenby and you at 410-319-8888. Let us know your thoughts on this. Lenny, sorry we couldn't get you before the break. Go ahead.
That's quite okay. You know, one of the things that troubles a lot of people is we have to remember that this happened in the context of a presidential election that was very contentious, where there was a weak Republican candidate that was still on the heels of an incumbent president that rode in with a whole lot of political capital just 4 years earlier. Now, I will contend that the Republicans, rather than investigating, they were attacking. They were trying to take down Obama. And if we can't take down Obama, we're going to take down Clinton for 2016. Rather than doing their job in getting to the bottom of it for whatever it is. If there's collateral damage on the Republican side, so be it. If there's oversight that Republicans in the Senate or the Congress or those in the administration made, maybe even Robert Gates made at one point in time that led to that, so be it. They did not take that approach, though. It goes back to what Bob was saying. There was a lot of grandstanding. There was a lot of live television. You know what they say about Washington? Washington is Hollywood for ugly people. And you saw an awful lot of that during that committee. Now, when we go back to this with Trey Gowdy, if we can get people asking real questions and getting to the bottom of this once and for all, don't unpeel the onion as slowly as it has been unpeeled with Benghazi. Unpeel it right then and there. That's the problem. We always find another fact that makes the Republicans jump up, want to do more about it, and then when they get the people in front of them, they want to grandstand. It cannot go down that path again if we continue another step in this long process.
And you know, it puzzles me that Democrats don't want to take part in this. Granted, it's been strung out and confused and combobulated. But whatever happened to learn to struggle, learn to win? Learn how to go into these meetings and win. Learn how to win. And you know, I'm perfectly happy to see Hillary Clinton asked, was she in contact with President Obama that day? That's fine. I don't have any problem with that. I'm puzzled by the failure of Democrats and liberals to be able to win and to be able to challenge the media environments that allow this to go on. You know, the New York Times did a gigantic front page review of Benghazi a few months ago, and even there, they flatly misquoted Susan Rice. Even there, where they were basically adopting reporting in a way that supported the Democratic position, they flatly misquoted Susan Rice at one point, and they plainly misparaphrased her, in my opinion, elsewhere. Susan Rice is a pariah now. Even within the media, you can't say that she was instantly misparaphrased, instantly misrepresented. You can't say that. And the liberal world has to learn how to deal with this and how to fight back and win. We have to learn how to fight. And we have a bunch of corporate liberals who won't fight. They're on TV making $7 million a year, and they're very careful and cautious, and they have all their careful issues that play well. And we accept them as our leaders. They're not leading.
Bob, I'll tell you why liberals and Democrats do not have to learn how to fight and struggle in order to win. It's because Republicans, over the last several terms, despite the unpopularity of this president from time to time, they have made it so easy for Democrats to win where they haven't had to fight. Think about 2012. Todd Akin, justify, you know, with the rape comments. Think about 2010 with Christine O'Donnell and out in Nevada with Sharon Angle. When you have these easy situations, the second leading fundraiser in the Congress in 2012 was Alan West, who was also the most, you know, controversial person in the Congress. So when you have all these scenarios out there, Mitt Romney was a weak presidential candidate from the Republican side after Herman Cain and Rick Perry and Michelle Bachmann and Rick Santorum. When you have all these things lined up, Democrats haven't had to fight hard in order to win, which is why you have the conundrum that you have on your side of the aisle.
Yeah, and I'm not even saying learn to struggle, learn to win so Democrats can win more elections. I'm saying I want them to do that so the public will have a clear idea of what actually happened in some of these circumstances. Whatever happened in Benghazi, Susan Rice did not say all the crazy things that she has been characterized as saying. She gave a rather what she said that day on that show. She on Face the Nation, she was asked if it was Al-Qaeda, and she said it might have been. We still have to find out. She said it might have been Al-Qaeda affiliates, and it might have been Al-Qaeda itself. She's been characterized as saying that it wasn't terrorists. That's not what she said. But in our media and political environment, you can make in this case, the mainstream press corps bought the storyline from the Republican Party. They don't always do that anymore, but they did in this case. And we had our latest example of bogus facts, which everyone has heard 3 million times, and no one seems to know how to stop it.
The media itself has become, in our society, and folks, what do you think about this? 410-319-8888. I mean, the media seems to me has become, we know it's become very partisan, but even if it has become partisan or has become nonsensical like CNN has become,
they're going to find that plane, Mark.
They're going to find that plane. If it's the last story they do, they're going to find that plane.
It's that food writer who's going to find the plane when he's off in all these countries. But go ahead.
But I think that you can be partisan and still and not lie. You can be partisan and have a discussion about where you're going. I mean, and that's not what we're having anywhere in the media right now. And I think that's part of the problem. Why people are just so frustrated by all this. I don't think Benghazi is going to hold as a campaign issue for most people in America that could care less. But part of the problem is that everything we do is a campaign issue. We talked about before we went on the air that the whole Keystone Pipeline in the Senate, the debates are having in the Senate, nothing's about whether or not you should be for or against the Keystone Pipeline. Should we support it because we need oil and gas? Should we not support it because we need to find an alternative energy future and not support this pipeline? The debate is over how we cannot bring this thing to vote so we can win or lose an election, and not lose an election. That's what it's about.
Yeah, and as Lenny said, I mean, every issue is about the next election always now. I mean, do you know when Bill Clinton ran for president, and that was in 1992 when he was elected, he didn't announce he was running until it was October or November of 91. He didn't announce until 12 months ahead of time. Now the discussion starts 3 years ahead of time. I mean, and this is a press thing. This is largely a press thing. The press loves talking about this. It's an easy way to avoid talking about more boring, more serious topics. And this endless discussion of the next election or the next election after that, it's just a crippling part of our pseudo-journalism. It's not journalism. It's just time-killing.
Hey, this used to be called yellow journalism 60, 70, 80 years ago. Now you expect a bias when you turn on the television. This is more opinion-based programming than it is news reporting nowadays. And unfortunately, we as an American people collectively have bought into this. So therefore, people are not trying to find solutions. People are trying to find justifications to show why their side is right. And we can justify anything in America as we're sliding down the global scale in regards to the economy, in regards to military might, in regards to innovation, in regards to education. That's exactly what's happening, because we're more inclined to justify our side than we are to find solutions with the other side.
Well, I agree with that.
I mean, we're going to get this call coming in here in a moment, 410-319-8888, to hear your thoughts on this. You know, and all of this, I'm just really kind of no longer taken aback by all this. But, I mean, I think because of some of the behavior in Congress. I mean, I remember when Chairman Issa attacked Congressman Cummings, and that whole thing was just this political charade that made very little sense to me. I mean, it was just an attack, and that committee didn't go anywhere either. I mean, that's what we've come down to, I think, in this Congress. And I don't mind partisan warfare if it's around things that mean something, if it's around issues that people are battling for because they believe in them. They believe in a certain set of rules. They believe in environmental issues, around civil rights legislation and how you would battle around that. I mean, people have to have things they believe in and fight, but that's not what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. That's what's bothering me so much. You know, I mean, I what are they going to get to in the bottom of Benghazi? I think probably not very much.
There's really not much left to get. You know, to be honest, there's not a lot left to get to as far as anyone knows. There's not anything left to get to. Obviously, there was something that didn't work out very well there, obviously. But, you know, and that has been investigated. But there's not much left other than false narratives about what was said and what was done and how the public was deceived, although the public really wasn't. To be honest, the public wasn't deceived in real time, to be honest about it.
I mean, I think that nobody really understood what was happening at
When you say that it was over a video, and I disagree with that, Bob. I mean, the context of this still in 2012 was a vice president bragging that GM is alive and Al-Qaeda is dead. This attack happened on September 11th. After months of saying this, it happens on the anniversary of September 11th, 2001. Yes, if it would have come out, yeah, Al-Qaeda did it. After bragging for months that Al-Qaeda is on the run, this would have taken a severe hit on the president's reelection numbers. And let's put it in context again, and then Mitt Romney wins the first debate? We might have a President Romney if all of those things played out the way we're talking about them in 2014, if they'd have played out with those quote-unquote facts in 2012. Well, so let's not underestimate the importance of spinning that the way they did out of the administration. It was all about the presidential election. It had nothing to do about getting to the actual facts at that point in time in that context.
Well, I'm going to disagree in this respect. There's never been any evidence that has surfaced that the attack was designed as an anniversary attack on September 11th. It did happen on September 11th, but in fact, protests and riots are happening all over the Islamic world at that point because of that ridiculous video.
If on September 11th, after the president and the vice president of the United States campaign on the fact that GM is alive and Al-Qaeda is dead, Al-Qaeda's on the run, and this happens right after President Obama said that same exact statement in Charlotte, North Carolina,
right,
for his nomination acceptance speech, and then this happens, that's a blow, whether it's perception or reality. We know in politics they're both the same.
I agree, but
all
I'm saying is when Susan Rice was asked that day, do you agree that the prime minister of Libya had been on Face the Nation and made some claims that have not panned out, and he claimed this was Al-Qaeda, and she was asked, do you agree with Mr. Magariaf that this was Al-Qaeda? She said, we still are investigating. It may have been Al-Qaeda affiliates. It may have been Al-Qaeda itself. That's what she said. I mean, and that was instantly
the primary narrative was that it was a video. That was the primary narrative. That was what was promoted. That was what was reported, and that's what was replicated throughout the media, and that shifted the attention away from Al Qaeda.
I think if you look,
allowed the president to still look like a strong commander in chief that took down Osama bin Laden and took down Al Qaeda, which is what they needed to take because the economy wasn't working out. Obamacare wasn't popular. They had already lost momentum when it came to the 2010 midterms, and the credit rating went down. The only thing that this president could really hang his hat on was the fact that he was a strong commander-in-chief, and he got Osama bin Laden. And if he would have lost that, he might have lost the election.
Well, that all may be true. I'll just say to you, if you look at what she actually said on the shows that day, I find very little that's wrong or objectionable in what she said, and as opposed to what it has been said that she said. And, you know, what it has been said that she said has ruled our discourse for the last 20 months as opposed to what she actually said.
And I think that part of it, let's open the phones here, 410-319-8888, but I think part of the problem is that liberals or conservatives, we have this in the press, we have this bogeyman called Al-Qaeda that we throw up all the time. And, you know, that in essence, Al-Qaeda isn't. There are lots of groups around the world that were inspired by, whether it's what's happening in Syria right now, whether it's Boko Haram in Nigeria. I can name a dozen other groups off the top of my head from across the world. But you know, we use this bogeyman, Al-Qaeda, like they're everywhere, but in the trees and they're waiting to come down on us. But they're not that organized mass. I mean, that is that's pretty much gone. I think most people would say that, but I think that the reality is that I think Susan Rice didn't know what was going on. Nobody knew what was going on that day. That whole house that was attacked was full of CIA agents. We don't know the underplay of what happened with that at all. And we may never know because it did involve the parts of the intelligence agency. There clearly was this breach between the CIA and the State Department. All that, I think, is real. That's always been there. And there are different intelligence units. I think that's part of what you're looking at. But I'm not quite sure what we will get under to get out.
All I'll say is this is an interesting example of, and I compare it to what happened to candidate Gore in campaign 2000 with constant misparaphrasing of things that he said. And by the way, Romney was misparaphrased about several things in ridiculous ways during the campaign 2012. There's a phenomenon in our discourse now where silly paraphrase bubbles up and the press corps accepts it and starts running with it. And once the silly paraphrase has been accepted, it can never be taken back. And it's been going on for a long time now, and it's just really, really dumb. But it's one of the ways that our discourse works. And I blame the journalists more than the politicians. It's a journalistic problem. And I think it's very active here with the Susan Rice thing. And some of the silly claims that were attributed to Romney in that campaign, too. But with her, it's gone on forever.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Your thoughts on Benghazi? We'll talk a bit about Nigeria in a moment as well. And, Bruce, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. How you doing this morning?
All right.
Generally, I lean conservative, not on all issues, but most issues. And, you know, both sides play the game. Let's be honest. You guys are partisan, too, somewhat. So let's be fair.
We're saying that. Everybody here is saying the same thing.
That's fair. But, you know, this is just my opinion. I think both the liberals and conservatives tell some whoppers. But in my opinion, generally, I think the liberals tell the bigger whoppers. And as far as Susan Rice, I honestly think this is speculation. I don't know. The fact that she came out on that particular Sunday, the five shows, made it sound too much like spin. Personally, I think if maybe they wouldn't have made such a big deal about it on that Sunday, maybe it would have went away. That's just my opinion.
The other side is if she had not shown up, something else might have happened.
They had to say something.
It was the DNC had just ended. We were in high season for the presidential campaign. Much of what President Obama had been doing in regards to in the polls, he was vulnerable. And then that transpired. He had to show strength as commander-in-chief because the economy wasn't good, the unemployment rate wasn't good. There were so many unfavorables facing this president that the only way he was able to survive at that point in time was the fact that Mitt Romney wasn't beloved by the Republican Party even after our convention. So he had to show something, hoping that he can ride that momentum, strong commander-in-chief, go into their first debate, knock Romney out, and win from there. It didn't happen in the first debate. It did happen in the second debate, and you saw who won in November.
Yeah, and you have to say, even on September 16th, when Susan Rice did the five shows, she was not even asked about Benghazi on CNN, but so she discussed it on four shows. She wasn't asked about it on CNN, and because there was rioting going on all over the Islamic world. On Meet the Press, she was asked first about protests and riots in Yemen, Pakistan, and Egypt before they even got to Benghazi. So they were addressing more than just Benghazi that day. And those other demonstrations and riots were about the video. I mean, I don't think anyone seriously disputes that, although that's been erased in part of the invention about these events.
Well, I think whether we're looking at Syria, Yemen, or what's happening in Nigeria at the moment with Boko Haram, I think it also shows, and what's happening between Israelis and Palestinians, I think that the West and the United States government has very little to offer. They've offered very little. They've been able to do very little. And I wouldn't say, and I think that that's the case, whether it be President Barack Obama or the President George Bush or President Hillary Clinton or President Jeb Bush.
No, I'm not offering this as a defense of President Obama's policy. I don't have a strong view about that or Hillary Clinton's role as Secretary of State. I never quite understood why she was lionized so much, frankly. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, and I'm not saying this is good or bad about President Obama's policy. I'm just saying there was a large problem throughout the Islamic world that weekend, and Susan Rice was not just there to talk about Benghazi. And when she talked about the video, she was largely talking about the other trouble spots going on at that time, which is what she was asked about first on several of those shows.
I wonder what we think, since I raised the issue, I wanted to talk about this for a minute before we ran out of time, which was Nigeria, which we've talked about a great deal, and Boko Haram and the kidnapped young women. And I'm curious what we really think in terms of this, our government of ours, and what a response could be, should be, can be. Lenny?
Yeah, Lenny, please.
Well, I think it's going to be two-rail now. Mark, you used the word government, which also implies CIA. I do think this is going to be a very public response, a lot of public posturing. I think that they're going to claim to work with the Nigerian government. I'm sure they're going to do that, and they're going to try to put whatever public and official measures into place that they can in order to pressure Boko Haram to return the girls. And I do think that the other side of that is the government's going to do some things that the American people will never want to hear about that would probably disgust a good amount of Americans, but may lead to the girls being returned, whether that's negotiations and undercover payments to just going and taking them out. I think that taking out Boko Haram or the leadership in order to free the girls in whatever way possible, I do think it's going to be a two-rail approach. I do think you're going to hear something officially, and that it's going to be a lot of stuff going on underneath the surface, if you will. It'd be much like a duck where it's going to be very cool on top and legs fluttering like crazy underneath to get this thing going forward.
You know, I think that the situation to me is interesting. There's been some interesting stories from people trying to tie Boko Haram with the CIA. I've seen some of those articles come out. But what's interesting, when I read those articles with a skeptic's view, because I'm not a conspiratorialist, but what's interesting is that some of the stuff people are writing about are saying that the roots of Boko Haram, just like the roots of Al-Qaeda, lie in failed former policies of the American government, in that we tried to undermine the Algerian government, we tried to undermine the Libyan government by supplying money and arms to more fundamentalist groups in the Islamic world to take these governments on, and that the leadership of Boko Haram were part of that world that at one point was being funded by, people are alleging, and I want to find out more about this, the U.S. government, as we did the Muslim fighters who took on the communist-led regime of Afghanistan. So, that's all this. This is starting to bubble out, too, which I think will be just kind of our continuing failed, if it's true, our continuing failed policies
and,
around the world.
And this is exactly why Rand Paul is going to be next president of the United States with his father, Ron Paul, as Secretary of State.
I'm going to have to go no with that one, but okay. I don't see that happening.
I don't. I would not make a prediction about the next election, but I was just kidding.
But But, I mean, I think this is, it's a very difficult situation. I think that it's...
But the complexity of these events can never be encompassed by our discourse, which can't even figure out what people said on nationally broadcast TV shows.
Right.
There's nothing... We are not capable of having a discussion of any topic in this country. We can't do it at this point. Our press corps has stopped functioning.
We don't care about each other. I've said this previously, Bob, and don't let me interrupt, but we don't care about each other enough as Americans like we used to. We really feel as though there's one-third of the country that would like to see the country fail. And regardless of whether it's Democrats looking at Republicans saying that we want some type of Christianocracy, if you will, nowadays, or conservatives looking at liberals and saying they want socialism, and we don't look at each other as all being on the same team and then just having different perspectives. And if you don't have that perspective, you can't have debate. And if you can't have debate, you can't solve complex problems that really make a difference in a positive way moving forward. You have what you have, which is basically we all compete for political points and points in the media, and then we wonder why we continue to fail when it comes to education, comes to the economy, comes to jobs, comes to inner city communities, comes to basically how government works in this stonewalling of progress that we've had on both sides of the aisle for quite some time now.
No, I agree. Within the media, we have big corporate entities in encouraging people in blue and red worlds to loathe each other and to see the world in very narrow tribal ways. We have big corporate. It used to be main. You know, the right wing got there first with Rush and all that. And now the liberal world, you know, the liberal corporate world is catching up, and the mainstream press corps has stopped functioning years ago. They just don't even exist. They're just, you know, they just pick their sides on whatever the latest silly debate is.
One of the things we didn't talk about, I wish I thought about it earlier, but it just popped in my head as you were speaking, and I should have had it in my notes earlier to think about, was the last White House Correspondents' Dinner. And I heard this really interesting interview with the New York Times about why they've refused for the last 7 years now to take part in that dinner.
I'll say good for them on that. But it's, you know, it's...
Because that's all part and parcel of a Washington world that is so close to one another that it's blinded to what the rest of America wants to listen to.
No, they stopped being serious a long time ago. There's very little serious work done in the big mainstream press corps. It just doesn't exist. It ceased long ago. And they're all overpaid, and they're all on TV too much, and they're all at too many cocktail parties giving each other too many awards. And that's what they are now. They're just a big guild fraternal order. And they just don't play a serious role in our discussions.
Which I think in some ways, and we only have a couple minutes left here, Lenny, which is in some ways where from a more conservative perspective in America, where the Tea Party erupted from on one level.
Yeah.
People's anger over that issue.
It was exactly anger over that issue. And then even that effort, I mean, it's kind of funny. You were talking about Al-Qaeda. I was like, yeah, you're describing the foreign version of the Tea Party where it's not really one party. It's a group of individuals that work together, have similar goals in mind and a similar philosophy, but it has a different definition depending on what region of the country that you're in. The Tea Party existed and came to being in 2009 and 2010 as being angry with both sides, but now you even see this corporate Tea Party,
right.
And then you see the
right.
grassroots Tea Party even existing today. And the grassroots Tea Party, they can't, generally speaking, kick the establishment out of office anymore like they did in 2010, there or even 29, if you look at what happened in Virginia and New Jersey, you end up seeing this battle even there. So you even have this inner Tea Party battle and then the inner conservative battle, and then you see these things and factions in the Liberal Party, and everybody's kind of more caught up in patting each other on the back of, hey, we really stuck it to them. Well, what changed? Other than, you know, going off for 8 minutes on a television segment. That's not really making change in America, and it does not inspire a nation. It inspires factions, but it doesn't necessarily inspire or positively change a nation, and that's what we have to get back to.
Bring back Walter Cronkite. We need one version of the news.
you do need a Walter Cronkite type of person, and Bob makes a valid point, somebody that everybody trusts,
right.
That's going to be very objective, and it's just going to move forward from there. And everybody knows this is Switzerland. Leave him alone. He's going to give it to us straight, and then we'll go back to fighting from there.
Well, I think we can have this discussion some more between the two of you and some others in the studio about why we are as a society politically. And I think there's a lot of things to unearth around that, given the history of our country and Walter Cronkite and where the Congress was at that moment was a very different America. It was before the end of segregation. It was before the eruption of the Vietnam War. It was before a lot of things that have changed America that we've yet to come to grips with and how to redefine our country, I think. I think that's there's a lot of that there, too.
Valid point, Mark.
And so I will come back to that. Lenny, it's always great to have you on the show. Lenny McAllister, Republican strategist and a host of his own show, Night Talk, Get to the Point on Pittsburgh Cable News, and his own radio show, Get Right with Lenny McAllister at KDKA in Pittsburgh. You can also read his stuff on LennyMcAllister.com. We'll be linking to that. And Bob Summerby, editor of the Daily Howler, been a guest on the show now for the last 21 years. That hurts, doesn't it?
Not really.
It's good to have you here. Thank you both so much.
Thank you. God bless.
And we're going out here with Supremes. They scored their 10th number one hit with this. It's The Happening. So Supremes will come right back with our Soundbites episode for this week. Don't go away.